Recorded.
Hello, this is Bob Dobbs, and I'm with Ike Willis. It's December 11th, 2011. Ike Willis is at home in Los Angeles. I am on the island of Maui, part of the Hawaiian Islands, and we're going to go into an interesting aspect that Ike experienced with Frank Zappa that has not been publicly recorded before. Correct, Ike? This what we're going to go into it has not been talked about, as far as you know. You haven't.
No, I haven't. In fact, whatever. I hope we're talking about the right thing. Is that what we discussed over in Germany?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So to set the stage, my context is I knew Mae Brussel. I knew that she was excited about a magazine called The Rebel, which was going to come out around the time of the anniversary of the JFK assassination, November 22nd, 1983, the first issue. And Mae Brussel met Larry Flynt through the KAL 007 incident where an American plane was shot down by the Soviet Union. And, the congressman, I don't think he was a senator, Larry McDonald, was on the plane and he died. And that happened on September 1st, 1983. Mae Brussel immediately was suspicious of the incident. And within a week or so, Larry Flynt had put an ad in the LA Times or someplace, New York Times, saying, let's question the scenario. Maybe this plane was sent into Soviet airspace as a provocative action. And that would be by the CIA or somebody. Mae Brussel saw that ad. She'd already had research about Larry McDonald, actually thought Larry McDonald was part of a network that may have been the crew that shot Larry Flynt in 1978. So she called up Larry Flynt and gave him some more information about his scenario that he was speculating on or suspicious about. And Larry was inspired by meeting Mae Brussel over the phone. They got together. Then he decided to create a magazine based on her voluminous files that she had been building up since 1964. So that's why Mae Brussel hooked up with Larry Flynt, and I was a close co-researcher with Mae Brussel at that time, so I heard about this right away. Now, somewhere in there, can't remember right now, Frank Zappa explains that he was in the office the week that Larry Flynt was preparing this ad for the LA Times where he said, let's step back and not conclude the official story about the KAL shootdown. And Zappa looked at the ad and made some suggestions to Larry Flynt about the wording for various whatever reasons Frank had, legal protection reasons, better way of expressing it, something like that. So that was interesting to me that I find out later that Zappa was involved in making that paper, that ad, that brought Mae Brussel and Larry Flynt together and then later brought Frank Zappa and Mae Brussel together. Okay. What I would ask you first, Ike, do you remember Zappa talking about being at Larry Flynt's office and noticing the making of the ad, or the protest, whatever you call this thing, paid advertisement?
Well, actually, I didn't know anything about the Mae Brussel thing, actually.
Yeah, you never heard of her.
No, I'd never heard of her.
Well, that's all right. The point is you had the other connection through Frank. So what did you hear the soonest you heard about that, if you did at all?
Well, actually, I'd never heard anything about the that Frank was involved with the ad or that Larry was involved with the ad. I knew about the shoot down.
Right.
I knew about the shoot down, but I didn't know anything about the ad though.
Yeah. Now the reason, if I got this right, Frank was in the office is he was preparing something for Larry, and maybe the April 1984 Hustler piece on Frank, which was going to illustrate Thing Fish. Do you remember
right.
that?
Of course. Now that I remember, of course.
So you went to, I think you told me you went to Larry's office at some point, maybe in the fall of 83, with Frank.
Actually, we went to Larry's house.
Oh, okay.
We went to Larry's house because Larry was going to be one of the backers for the Thingfish musical.
Right, the musical. Yes.
Yes. And so we went to Larry's house to in order to negotiate with Larry and for Frank and Larry to talk about the musical and et cetera, like that.
Do you recall, you have a pretty good memory for dates. Do you recall the date or month that was?
That was around, let's see, mid to late October of 83.
Right. Do you recall?
At the beginning of the Thingfish, recording session.
Right. Do you recall anything at that meeting about Larry running for president?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Okay. So now we'll go back. That's the beginning of this story. Now, when did Frank first mention the concept of Thingfish to you? Is this 82 or early 83? When does that happen?
Well, no, actually, we were going into the studio to... I knew about the musical. And it was going to be... there wasn't a Thingfish at the time. It was going to be... It was going to be a musical called The Mammy Nuns.
And what, okay, this, the AIDS scenario is in that?
Well, it ended up being about that. It ended up being about that when Frank heard from one of his neighbors next door about a friend of his who worked at a top secret laboratory for, I guess he had a top secret clearance, et cetera. And his next door neighbor's friend told him that he had figured out what he was working on, and it turned out to be AIDS.
Okay, so when do you think that happened? When did Frank get that call, that bit of information? Before the meeting?
You mean with Larry?
Yeah.
I think that was maybe after. I believe it was like the week after, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. So the Mammy Nuns, is that starting in the summer of 83 or the spring of 83 or earlier?
It was the fall of 83.
So this is all happening at the same time. And
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. And the Mammy Nuns, what was the pre-AIDS scenario of Mammy Nuns is what was being presented to Larry Flynt. The AIDS part is not till later.
It's not till later. Yes, exactly.
So, what was Frank excited about in the Mammy Nuns original plot scenario? What was the theme?
Well, it wasn't the plot.
It was just a musical.
Yeah, just a musical.
Well, the Mammy Nuns is about people distorted by the food, mutated by the food in the prison.
Well, that turned out to be later.
Ah.
That turned out to be later, yes. When we found out about the AIDS thing, then we changed it around to the food, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, but what is the concept first then? Why is Frank interested in having a musical about something called the Mammy Nuns before the AIDS part?
Well, it was just music at that point. It was going to be like a combination of the music from Joe's Garage, the music from You Are What You Is, and all the other records we've done to that point.
Many of the records that you were on, not the records before.
Mainly the records that I was on.
So there, Frank liked to patch in a storyline at the end almost. He'd just make one up or fit it in.
Actually, he patched in the storyline in the middle. It sort of started to come about as we... After he found out from his neighbor about the AIDS connection,
right,
so to speak, yeah.
But there was no real storyline before that, and Larry was keen on just having Frank's music being performed.
Exactly.
Okay, so how many people knew about this project besides you? the first
well,
part.
Well, you know, a few of the guys in the band knew about it. I mean, we were in the studio doing the sessions and stuff like that. But that was pretty much it. I mean, all we knew it was just the recording sessions.
Right.
Yeah, it was just the recording sessions for what was going to be the musical.
And it would be at least an album if the musical didn't happen.
Exactly.
Right. So the Amos and Andy aspect, was that part of the Mammy Nun scenario before the AIDS thing?
Well, it was something that I did. It was something that I used to do on stage just to joke around. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right.
Yeah. That was just part of the fun aspect of what we were doing.
Was the patois, the dialect, that was part of the first setup?
Well, it was kind of in and out. You know what I'm saying?
It right.
It was kind of something that we happened to be doing at the time.
Okay, so
yeah.
You have in '83. What do you read? There was a tour in '82, which you weren't part of, or were you? Was it?
Exactly. No, I wasn't a part of that. I was at my wife and I were at home having our kids, starting our family.
Right. So you were not part of the '82 tour. So '83, no tours planned at that point, and he's just going to make an album, and you were called in to be part of it, and you were available.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So then, this phone call is about a neighbor who had just found out from his old college roommate, who had worked in classified laboratories for many years. The AIDS story was starting to surface in 82, 83. Some details had come out. Or this friend of Frank's neighbor got to see some scientific data about it, and he was shocked to think that he was part of the making of the AIDS virus. Correct? The man-made, whatever, genetically engineered virus. So he tells Frank's neighbor. How well did Frank know the neighbor? Do you know?
Well, this was his next-door neighbor.
So he knew him, but Frank didn't socialize that much, did he? You know, he's just in the studio all the time.
Well, he sort of did. I mean, he's known this guy. He'd known this guy for years.
Right. So eventually they got to know each other. It took a long time with Frank's reclusiveness. So by this time he's a trusted friend, and the friend wants to tell Frank this thing. Because does he think Frank can do something about it, or he just was just the course of a casual conversation? Do you know about
it was,
that?
It was in the course of a conversation between me and Frank. And we were discussing it, we were just trying to figure out a way for us. We were trying to figure out a way for us to alert people to the fact that this stuff was going on.
Okay, but before we get there, you weren't there when the neighbor told Frank.
No, this was the night. This was the day after.
Right, you report into work, and he says,
yeah,
"I heard." And he says, "I had an interesting story last night," and he tells it to you. And remember, Frank says, "Now this is a big decision, Ike. Is that a little later, or are you just?" Thinking about the story when he tells you, you're just wondering what to do about it, or when does the quote paranoia start to happen?
Well, what happened was, as Frank was telling me the story, he ended it with basically, we're going to have to do something about it. You know, like there's got to be some way to tell people about what he just found out.
Right,
because it was just so evil and insidious and et cetera, that you know there had to be some way that we could spread the word, and that's basically all during the same conversation.
Right. Now, did he tell you why he believed the neighbor? What maybe why the neighbor did the neighbor expect Frank to do something with it?
No.
So you don't know the motive or what the neighbor is. You have no more information on the neighbor at that point.
No, I don't. Well, Frank is just the kind of guy. He's just the kind of guy who you know, he's a big-hearted guy. He was a very, very big-hearted guy. And, you know, both of us just couldn't believe that that was actually going on.
Right.
Everybody was pretty suspicious about the whole AIDS thing anyway. You know, the fact that it was happening and it was going on. And basically it was so unbelievable to us.
To actually have your suspicions confirmed by such a technical situation.
Exactly, and by that kind of person. You know, and by that kind of person who worked for the government, et cetera, et cetera. And so it was just so amazing that such a thing was actually going on.
Right.
That we were just stunned by the whole thing. You know, we were just stunned by the whole thing. It was just amazing.
And the guy who was a friend of the neighbor who did this did not know. He was on a need-to-know basis. He did not know what he was doing in the lab, what it was being used for. So he wasn't part of a conscious conspiracy. He just followed orders made something.
Exactly.
And now he's finding out, you know, 8 years later or something, this is what his material went into, what he did in the lab. So,
exactly.
Right. So then in that first conversation, do you get to the point of saying, we can fit this into the Mammy Nuns?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That sort of became the vehicle of the whole Mammy Nuns thing. Kind of became the vehicle by which we could at least get the word out and basically stay alive. That was the main thing.
Frank was not going to sacrifice himself for this, but he wanted to make an effort.
Well, yeah, I mean, we wanted to still come out alive on the whole deal.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Carolyn.
It was pretty amazing as you think about it now. I mean, we were once again, we were just so stunned by the whole aspect of it.
The crude brutality and something, the crude meanness of being this being done on the American population.
Pretty much so, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. And it's just so amazing. You know, just so amazing that such a thing was actually going on, that, you know, we had to think there had to be some way that we could at least alert people, at least tell people about it. You know what I'm saying? We could try to tell people about it, and at the same time, once again, stay alive.
Right. Now, that we don't know if the neighbor, you don't know if the neighbor said, I will tell Frank. I know Frank will try to get it out there because Frank had an audience. You don't know if the neighbor thought that.
No, I don't. In fact, I don't think that was a part of his thought processes at all. they were just sitting, drinking, sipping some wine, and, you know, just talking about, you know, just shooting the breeze and
about the terrible Reagan administration.
yeah, among other things. Yeah.
Yeah, and but Frank, he always had a sense of let's get the information out there. If I've got it, I'm going to put it out there. So that's the journalist part of Frank, almost, right? He's a journalist.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, I remember you telling me when you told me this summer, this story last summer at the Zappanelli 22. He asked you, now you're going to have to make a decision. You're just starting a family. This could get us killed. How much do you want to help me with this? Was that said in that first meeting or like the next day?
No, that was pretty much said like that day, you know, as we were discussing it.
And Frank was, he said, I'm going to do it, but he respected your right to back off.
Yes, exactly. He pretty much told me that, you know, I had to make a decision whether or not to follow through, you know, whether or not to follow through with the risk of actually following through with trying to tell people what was going on, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that was his statement because, you know, he said that he was, you know, he said that he was, you know, already on the government's radar for years as a subversive and things like that.
Right.
And so, essentially, I had to decide whether or not I was going to accompany him in this thing, whatever, however it turned out, whatever form it took.
Right.
To get the word out there, to get the information out there, so that, you know, we could at least warn people.
Right.
Warn people. So, and that's essentially what it turned out to be. It's like, you know, you're starting a family. You know, it's going to be a big risk. You know, and our phones were tapped, and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I just had to decide whether or not I was going to be in on it. You know, and I told him, yeah, I'm there. I'm with you.
Well, did you want to discuss it with your wife first, or you said yes before you went home?
Well, I did discuss it with my wife. You know, I did discuss it with her, and at the same time, essentially, I discussed it with her, and we went back and forth over it, and she decided as well that, you know, it was worth the risk.
The risk. So you pretty well committed to it before you went home and told her you probably would be committed and were happy that she didn't resist it too much.
Well, yeah, because it was very important.
Yeah. Okay, so the next day you come in, how quickly do you figure out how to stick it into the Mammy Nuns story?
Well, what Frank did was when he came in the next day, he had already started on like a basic plot line. You know, he started on a basic storyline about the mystery disease and et cetera, like that.
Yeah.
And yeah. It started pretty much that way.
And that they would be prisoners. Yeah, that scenario.
Yeah. And it was a kind of connection with Joe's Garage as well, because, you know, people being sent to jail for music and things like that. So it was kind of the same connection to Joe's Garage too.
Right, because he had always said that the counterculture was a CIA plot, the LSD stuff. He had said that in the late 60s.
Yeah, exactly.
So he had a, quote, conspiratorial bent on it, didn't trust the government. But even with, you know, what he thought about music being banned, and that's Naren Joe's Garage, he still was shocked when it actually hit home what was going on. He didn't think they'd go that far.
Pretty much, yeah.
So were the Mammy Nuns in the plot before this meeting in jail? In the original plot?
No,
they weren't.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So that's...
The Mammy Nuns were just a chorus line.
Right.
A,
for
a costumed chorus line.
For playing the Frank's music.
Yes, to perform Frank's music.
So so by the next day, he's telling you, we're going to have them start in jail, they get infected in jail, and then they go public and or whatever the storyline.
That sort of developed on its own, actually. The whole jail thing and et cetera, that sort of developed on its own.
Would that take a week or two or a month to get the whole story?
Well, over the course of time, the script got bigger and bigger. Okay, the script got bigger and bigger, and it got more involved. And then the story of the part about the jail part and the part about
the mystery disease,
et cetera, that just started developing.
Right. So did it take? Were you finished by January, or were you finished by November in the plot?
We were finished by November, December, something like that, because then we were recording it all at the same time.
Right. So it was ready. It was ready by the beginning of 1984, which is appropriate for a 1984 theme.
Yeah.
in the sense of the Big Brother and George Orwell. Okay.
Yeah,
so
I don't know if he was thinking about that part of it, but he was definitely, you know, just how Frank is. He likes to get things done. So we recorded it and it just took on a life of its own, pretty much.
Do you know if he told Gail about this story or any of this aspect during that period?
Probably, because they talked all the time and stuff. So that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Right, and she didn't seem to object on the risk level part.
No, because Frank is Frank,
Yeah. Okay, so did you say that the Larry Flynt meeting happened a week before or after this meeting?
Either a week or maybe not even a week, maybe just days, a day or two before then.
Yeah, so what's interesting, you've got Larry Flynt, don't know if Frank knew it. Well, he knew the ad, which is in the first couple of weeks of September 1983. Then a month later, approximately in October, you guys get this information from the neighbor, and he's already involved with Larry Flynt, and you're going to go over there and present the Mammy Nun scenario and have the pictures taken and all that. I get. No, just the funding. There was no Hustler magazine talk maybe at that point.
No.
Yeah, so the Hustler magazine pictures and scenario, does that include the AIDS scenario? Not in the pictures, but is that the completed idea after the AIDS is put in? Or is it the first Mammy Nun plot that you see in the pictures of 1984, April 84, Hustler?
Well, no, it had already been fleshed out and stuff like that. But and Larry knew about it because Frank talked to Larry about it. But by the time it came for the photos and etc., it wasn't included. It wasn't included in the Hustler magazine.
Right, because you had told me that Frank was not going to make it obvious in the storyline, the AIDS subplot.
Exactly.
Right.
It wasn't going to be obvious. It wasn't going to be obvious at all.
Right. So what's interesting is right at this period, in October, November, Larry Flynt is starting what he hopes to be an alternative to Time magazine, a major magazine to provide alternative views to the mainstream's journalism. And he has this hot story right there, and he's not going to put it in the Rebel, but he's going to expose, JFK assassination, all the different things that they were doing. So he was intending to be, a very interesting magazine, and he had this hot story. Do you know if Frank discussed it being in Rebel or not, or anything like that with Larry?
No, it was actually I don't know because.
Right.
I wasn't even up on I wasn't even up on the whole Rebel thing, or anything like that. I really wasn't.
Frank didn't
aware.
Mention.
Yeah. He hadn't mentioned all that to me. There's a lot of things going on.
Right.
Going on. Yeah.
Okay, so you start doing the story. Is Frank? Does he remind you of? Well, we've got to fit this in, but not get ourselves killed. Is that only said once? Or does it come back to every couple of weeks? He says, "Okay, remember, we got limitations."
No. He only mentioned that once, and then as the storyline progressed, he would just come in every day with more copy for me to read and record.
Right.
And the story and the pages just grew and grew and grew.
Okay, so now you record it. It's ready by January. I think I recall the album was released in early 84. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, something like that.
Right. So are you wondering what people are going to hear, what they're going to make of it? Are you wondering how the story is going to get out, or you don't even care about it?
Well, at that point, we were done, and it was released, and essentially the idea was that the people who were smart enough to get it, would pick up on it. You know what I mean? They'd pick up on the plot line and kind of realize what it was about. And as time went on, people did.
Did Frank Did he discuss with you how much he would talk about it as people wondered if that's what he meant?
Say that again?
Did Frank discuss with you how much he would discuss it once people were asking if that's what he meant?
No, not at all.
He didn't tell you how far he'd talk about it?
No, no, not at all.
If I remember, in the interviews he did in 84, I don't know if it was in 84, but eventually he's saying, I believe that somebody did it, don't know if it was the government or something, but somebody did it, and he would point out that a disease like that couldn't have popped up all over the place at the same time. You know,
exactly.
And I think what was interesting, he said, Reagan's worried about Star Wars and incoming missiles, but the real battlefront is biological warfare.
Exactly.
And that was a good general idea to say to people, and he would say that in the interviews. But he didn't, he definitely never mentioned what he knew from the neighbor.
No, he did not. Not out front, no.
So is Frank thinking, okay, if the government will do this, then they will kill me and Ike immediately if we do anything. He was thinking he had to deal with the
if we overtly just said what it was, yes.
He knew he'd
be
killed.
Well, yeah, pretty much. We had a pretty good idea that that's what would happen. Yeah.
Because if the government would even whoever is doing this, maybe it's not even the government. If they're so brutal to do this to a population, then what are two musicians?
Exactly, precisely.
Right. Okay, so that happens in 84. Is there, what about the fact that Frank had his phone tapped? He told me that in 88, but that's 4 years later. What about the tapping? Was he already aware of that in 83?
Well, and once he told me that to be aware of that, you know, once he told me to be aware of the phones being tapped and et cetera, well, then, you know, I started looking out for it and looking for the signs of it. You know what I mean?
On your own phone?
On my own phone, sure.
And he said he knew his was.
Oh, yeah.
And he said they had him under surveillance for years.
Exactly.
Okay, so then you go into 1985. Well, you do the tour in 84. Did you get a chance to tell anybody this story? A friend, a fan of Frank, a journalist?
I hadn't told anybody for years.
Well, did you?
I hadn't told anybody for years.
So you did tell somebody since 1984, but not then.
Not then. No, it took a while for me to even mention it, for me to even bring it up.
Did you mention it after Frank passed on or before to whoever you mentioned it to?
I mentioned it to just a couple of people before Frank passed, and then after he passed, I'd mentioned it to, you know, a few more people, you know, over the years.
Right. Did you ever mention it to did any of the other band members know about this?
Well,
this story.
I wasn't sure whether or not any of the other band members knew about that aspect of it.
And you weren't asking, and Frank could have told them and not told, you didn't know they were told, but it never was discussed. You never checked it out to see if any other band members had gotten the deeper story.
Precisely.
Right. So in 85, when he goes to speak in Congress in September 85, is there anything of the paranoid level of thinking or evidence that you notice with Frank, or that some warnings or this and that?
No, not really. I mean, like I said, we hadn't really, there wasn't a whole bunch of discussion about it, you know? I mean, I hadn't mentioned it to barely anybody, really.
Right. So it was just an inside piece that you knew. And did you wonder, say in 85, 86, if the authorities or the secret team had figured out what Frank was doing, and did you get fits of paranoia about that every now and then?
No, actually, we had Well, we were wondering, you know, we were just keeping our eyes and ears open just to see if they had picked up on any of it. And,
yeah.
And as far as we knew, nobody had picked up on it yet.
Or they wouldn't know about the neighbor, but they hadn't really, well, I guess what you...
Figured out what we were saying.
Yeah. They figured out it was something about a hint or a reference to an AIDS-like virus, and people thought Frank was commenting on AIDS as a potential conspiracy.
Well, no, actually, I don't think they put the put the AIDS thing together with it at all because of the fact that, you know, it's Frank, you know, it's Frank Zappa, so naturally, the powers that be wouldn't even pay that much attention to it.
Right.
And we were right.
All right. But I'm thinking, did any of the, I guess it was, the fans knew the hypothesis that Frank was presenting.
Yeah, these people started wondering about what the mystery disease was.
And in your own experience of feedback, it may have surprised you that they never thought it was AIDS at first.
Well, for the large part, I mean, for the large part. Oh, hold on, just a second.
Yeah.
Well, for the most part, they hadn't realized what was going on.
Right.
Okay. So no, I hadn't realized. They hadn't realized. I mean, the powers that be basically hadn't realized that that's what it was about, and they pretty much didn't pay that much attention to it.
Right. So then he does his famous commentary at the intervention at the Senate hearings on the record labeling.
Right.
Was there any paranoid effects from that Frank mentioned to you?
No.
Nobody seemed to be too upset about it.
No, I mean they thought it was just having to do with whatchamacallit, with censorship and things like that.
Right.
You know? And like I said, Frank had been doing this for so long, you know, the powers that be really didn't pay that much attention to the actual content of the albums because, you know, they had already written off Frank years ago as that insane, crazy
crank
guy.
He was a crank. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, do you remember any fans? I mean, you did the tour in 84. That might have been too early because I think AIDS really becomes part of the consciousness in 85 or so. It takes a couple of years.
It took a couple of years, actually, around 84, mid to late 84.
Okay. Did any fans from 84 to 8 ever ask you if that's what it was about, to you personally?
Every now and then, yes.
And there
every now and then, yes, a fan would ask.
Right, and you would say what?
I would, depending on who was doing the asking.
Yeah.
I would, depending on who was doing the asking, I'd say yes or no, depending on who was asking.
Right. Take someone like Joey Psychotic, who I knew. Did he ever? Do you recall him asking?
Oh yeah, Joey and I talked about it because Joey was a very, very good friend.
Right.
Joey was a near and dear friend of mine. And so we had, you know, we discussed it, and Joey did ask me, you know, he finally came out and asked me if that had anything to do with it. So, you know, Joey, I could tell, yes.
Right, Joey knew. Okay.
Joey knew.
So then you come, the next interesting point is in the 88 tour, I knew that the 60 Minutes crew came and I understood taped the Chicago concerts, but when I talked to you,
they taped a lot of shows.
Right, but when I talked to you last summer, you told me that no, they were there through most of the tour.
Yes, they did, because of the voter registration thing and all that stuff.
They were interested. They were supposedly interested in how much of a groundswell Frank could work up.
Exactly.
Yeah. So back at the years ago, I had a theory that Frank was poisoned by the 60 Minutes crew. Okay, I used to talk like this with Jerry Fialka. You know, I just said, I don't know if 20 Minutes crew around you, a Mae Brussel, a Sherman Skolnick would be very careful. They wouldn't trust those people. because it was such an important news magazine, it had to have some kind of CIA monitoring of it, just
of
because
course.
It was news, powerful news. So I got suspicious about, well, maybe Frank got nailed by something they did in the 88 tour. But when you told me they were there for weeks or months, maybe not every show, but many shows, that's odd.
Yeah.
That's odd to me.
Well, that was because of the League of Women Voters had given Frank an award registering so many people to vote and being a great American and stuff like that and et cetera, et cetera. So that was part of the reason why. That's part of the reason why 60 Minutes was doing a thing on our tour.
Right, and were they there at the beginning in February, or was it like March, April, May that they seemed to?
A little of both.
They were there from the beginning. They knew what was up.
Yeah, they were at the first few shows, and then they came back. Right, like mid, going toward the end of the tour.
Right. Now, the tour ends in June?
July, I think.
July. It goes to Europe, right?
Yeah, it goes to Europe, and then we come back.
And the Portland, Maine meeting, is it very close to then that it stops?
Oh, no. We finished the whole tour. We did the whole tour, but we just didn't go back out anymore.
Ah, right. You didn't do the fall West Coast tour.
Exactly.
Right. So, all right. So the flare-up, and I don't want to get too distracted on this, but the flare-up between Scott and the rest of the members or whatever happened.
That happened in Portland, Maine.
And that is a week before the ending of the tour in July? Or?
Oh, no. Oh, no. God, no. That was – we had been – let's see. I think that was near the middle of the U.S., the U.S. part of the tour, I think.
Right. So you were given the job to sit on Scott, monitor him, and you were able to do that to get the tour done, at least up till the West Coast part.
Until Scott got away from me and basically raised so much of a ruckus by the time we got to Maine, I couldn't stop him in time. I didn't find out about it in time because I wasn't in the building.
Right, but that's... So Portland, Maine is the meeting where you're told to sit on Scott or before the tour?
No, that was during rehearsals before the tour started.
Oh, okay. So you're monitoring the whole thing. Then the Portland, Maine thing happens, but the tour continues.
Yes, because we couldn't stop the tour in the middle of the tour.
Right.
At that point it was too late, and Frank's not going to lose all that money, like that. And we had to finish the tour.
Okay, so the breakup happens once you're back in L.A. and the tour is on hiatus?
Yeah, but that's the thing. After we got home, Frank said, okay, basically he said, well, look, we're not going to go back out. We're
right.
not going to go back out. But part of that too, was the fact that Frank was getting sick
Right, he didn't, but no one knew that. But you find out in January 89, 6 months later.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And you realize he's not going to tour ever again, so that throws you in a tizzy about what the hell for yourself to do. And
exactly.
Pretty depressing scenario.
Definitely.
Now, when you told me that you were told, I hadn't read any of the interviews where you have said this before, but when you told me last summer that he knew by January 89, and he said it was
right.
terminal. Now.
Yeah, he said he was terminal.
And had he...
Hold on a second.
Okay.
Okay, good. I got to talk to you. That's the thing. He had found out that he was terminal. By that point, by that time, I'd moved up to Portland, Oregon. My wife and kids and I, we moved up to Portland, Oregon. And I was on my way to a gig, and Frank told me that that's what was going on.
Okay.
Therefore, we weren't going to go back out anymore. And et cetera, et cetera.
But when we talk about Frank going to four or five doctors, that is before the 88 tour.
That was during the course of rehearsals and et cetera, et cetera. And this had been going on for a couple of years, you know, in terms of him going to various doctors and things like that.
Trying to figure out what it is.
Trying to figure out what it was.
Right. Because I was thinking when we talked last summer that it suddenly burst on him in January 89, and I was assuming he wasn't ill during the tour, so I thought maybe he
was getting like things like colds and you know, sore throats, and you know, and he was pretty like exhausted at times and things like that, and he would go to various doctors, and that's when they were telling him, well, it's just stress, and it's stress and things like that, and it was a cumulative effect.
And it may not have been any cancer at that point. If he was given some kind of virus on the tour by some infiltrator of the 60 Minutes crew, then that would burst into his body within a few months and create a terminal thing, whereas it was not indicating that the years before. Maybe they knew if they were tapping his phone, they knew he was ill, they knew that might be a cover. So then they slip him something, and I don't know how it would be done, but they're pretty advanced on that stuff. And so they have the cover of him already being sick, sort of sick, but nobody can figure out, because it wasn't cancer at that point.
No, it wasn't.
Right.
But and, I mean, that's the thing. I hadn't even considered any of that.
Right.
You know?
It just seemed to be stressed.
I hadn't even thought about anything like that.
Yeah, you knew he was seeing. Did you know he was seeing a doctor in 87, 88?
Just, you know, going to get a checkup, that kind of thing.
Right.
You know?
And
that's
you,
the thing, because he was feeling, you know, tired at times and stuff like that, and he couldn't figure it out. So, you know, every now and then he would go and get a checkup just to check on himself.
And
that's how he was.
Right. And then you were within that. It was just common sense, nothing extreme, no disease, normal. Then he tells you. In January 9, he's over. It's over. He's gone.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. That was at that point. He said, "Well, look, I'm terminal. You know, don't tell anybody. Keep it under your hat. I haven't announced it publicly yet. That kind of thing." So that's just how it turned out.
Did you have any suspicions about it at that time, or within a few months of thinking about it?
No, none at all.
Did you ever later have some suspicions about it?
Actually, no.
Not until we talked about it this summer.
Exactly. Not until we talked about it this summer.
Yeah, where I said, well, maybe something was done to him. And then I said, look, it happened. He's gone in 6 months, so to speak. That's pretty fast. And
that is
fast, yes. And it does explain maybe why it was not detected for the years before, because it wasn't in there. It was not that.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's true. Yeah, but that's how it is. Yeah.
Right. Now, I don't know. We're not going to have a press conference demand an investigation into this. I mean, I don't know how you could pursue it. But as we've since the summer, are there other ideas you thought about it? Reasons they would do this to Frank?
No, not really. I hadn't gotten that far afield with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah.
So what we say is. The only possible way of being suspicious about it is if you conclude that the stuff sprung on him in the latter half of 1988 too fast. That's the
it was kind of weird, because he was getting ill and just really exhausted and not feeling all that well and things like that. So every now and then it would just flare up. But you know, hey, we're touring, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, it's just hard to tell.
Yeah, and it's natural to get tired.
It's natural to get tired. So you know, it's just hard to tell. Just hard to tell.
So, if you take what Frank knew about the AIDS and he kept it under wraps, and then you take the fact that 60 Minutes are obsessed with him and want to be around him for many hours. I don't think many people know that the 60 Minutes team was around that much, and then never produced the show.
They never produced the show, exactly. Now I was kind of thrown off by that.
Yeah.
I was kind of thrown off by that.
I remember Frank talking about it in an interview or something. He expected it to be. He said, "Look for that. Should be coming up in 60 Minutes at some point." I think it's when I interviewed him in October '88 that he mentioned it. you know.
Ah, okay, sure.
Yeah, that's where, you know, that's where he said, well, they did it, so where is it? He didn't say, where is it, but he said he expected it, that they would do something.
Yeah, we all expected it. We all expected it. Yes.
So why didn't they do it, Ike?
That's a great question. I'm not. That's a wonderful question because I have no idea why it was never aired.
After they put all those resources for weeks and months, whatever, all those many times, all that paid work by Cameron, and not do
exactly.
it. That's odd.
It's very odd. Hey, I've got a question. How much longer are we going to be at it here? Because I've got to pick up my wife from work pretty soon here.
Well, that's. That's the main point.
We can continue. You can call back and we can do more.
Tonight or another time?
Let's say tomorrow or Tuesday.
All right, let's try to fit it in. I would like to go into other areas about you as a musician. I think we've laid out that's all we know is what he knew about AIDS. How he could have talked about it on the phone, and the surveillors knew that he knew that. If it was true, it may not even be true what the guy, the neighbor's friend, thought. You know,
exactly, precisely.
But the clinker to me is that no one knows that there was so much coverage by 60 Minutes, and then that the show was never done, and then Frank is gone.
Exactly. Okay, good. So let's hold it there, and then on like in another day or two. Then we can pick it back up. We can pick it back up from there.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Ike.
You the man, Bob.
All right. Thank you. You the man, too.
Say hi to the wife.
I will. Okay.
Thanks, buddy.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.